I think we've pretty much covered the depression. You said that you lived with your father-in-law because that's the only way you could afford it.
That's right.
What do you remember about Prohibition? Your father, that's when he changed.
My father had been in the men's clothing furnishing business for many, many years and acquired his first hotel in Connersville, which was closed, and was able to obtain the liquor license, which was very hard to obtain. Mm-hmm. It took an awful lot of a good citizenship, we'll say, to have the judges grant a new license. And he obtained a new license. And then, after a few years, that first hotel was sold. It still had the clothing store. And then he was able to acquire the second hotel, the Yawk House, which was the largest hotel in Connersville. It had all of 50 rooms with some baths. And he was in that hotel for 5 years when Prohibition came in.
What year was Prohibition?
1919.
Mm-hmm. And then?
And moved back to Pittsburgh where they were...
So he closed up the hotel?
He didn't close the hotel. He just... the lease was up. He didn't own the building. He just retired from the hotel. It was later just torn down to make way for the streetcar company.
So he retired when Prohibition came.
That's right. He moved back to Pittsburgh for several reasons. Didn't want to get involved in the illegal dealing in liquors, for which he was approached on many occasions. And secondly, having sisters and very few Jews in Connersville, and no eligibles, we'll say, he wanted to have the girls have an opportunity to meet a larger circle of Jewish people.
His daughters?
Yes.
Okay. I think we've covered pretty well your law career and all your relationships. Now, this is something on children. Contrast the way you were raised with the way you raised them.
Well,
you had two families.
First, personally, as a child, I had no problems growing up. We had a large family. There was no bickering, except the ordinary child play. And in the winter time, my father was always buying things in large lots because of the size of the family.
Oh, I can
imagine. We're getting actually what amounted to practically a carload of apples and nuts, and we'd sit around the large dining room table at night cracking nuts, and had a fireplace there. And a couple of sisters played the piano and all that. So we had a happy family life. Mm-hmm. There was no problems there. And we all helped out in my father's store when we grew old enough to dust boxes and wait on trade. And we sneaked out every once in a while to watch a ball game on a Saturday afternoon when we should have been in the store. Mm-hmm. But he was a liberal family. My father was always a nice guy, we'll call him that, and was well thought of in the town. And then when I came to Pittsburgh, when I married and had Betty Ann, my only child, she was an only child in the home with a grandfather living there and a mother who wasn't too well, and no problems. Betty Ann was always easy to live with, and she had an uncle and an aunt living in there also. Her aunt who lives
in... So they kind of substituted when you're...
That's right. And I think Betty Ann had a very happy life, and she started to Winchester in the first grade, I think it was. And
well, now she went to private school, so that was different.
That was it. That's right. That was different. And That was basically because my boss in the office, Mr. Aldrin's daughter, was going to Winchester, and they urged me to put Betty Ann in the school, mm-hmm. which I was glad to do. Betty Ann was always what we shall we call a comfortable student, so we never had any headaches, so we weren't sent for by the head of the school.
She got into Wellesley and graduated from there.
Yes.
She must have been a good student.
Just as good as she wanted to be. Which is a fact, even while in Wellesley...
She didn't work too hard.
No, she said she could have made a few more A's if she had really tried, but she'd like to go skiing or mm-hmm. do something else.
She went all 12 grades to Winchester.
That's right.
And so then she really was raised in a different way from you because she was...
She was just
an only child
in the family with an uncle uh-huh. and an uncle and an aunt.
Wasn't she spoiled a little bit with all this, the grandparents and the aunt and uncle around? I know I was.
Well, I can't answer that spoiled because she got anything she wanted in the sense of... she had her bicycle and all the things that kids want and... Mm-hmm. And
but she gave you no special problems.
Yeah, no special problems whatsoever.
And you said you had no problem with your stepchildren either.
Oh no. And then when I remarried, Jack was the older one was at Kiske, and Janet later on went to school in Washington, D.C., and Connie was at Winchester, so they just grew up. They had the country club to go to and swim and anything they wanted uh-huh. to do, and I think I may
of
have...
Of course, that was different from when the way you grew
oh,
up.
Oh, yes, no country club. Although, my father, twice... Mm-hmm. A place called Johnson's Farm, where we spent the entire summer. It was 3 or 4 miles from Connellsville. And then we had another place out in the country, McCoy Springs, where every Sunday there was another group gathering, picnic group, from the different lodges, whether it's the Elks or the Eagles or Masons, what have you. And I say he was sort of a generous host, and it was a beautiful spot. It was really a beautiful spot. So that was the kind of a life we had. He always had to have the fastest horse in the town. Mm-hmm. And he and my mother used to love to go sleigh riding in the wintertime. And he racing. He races the head in the small town. They roped off the streets. Mm-hmm. So it was a happy-go-lucky sort of a thing.
And you had simpler pleasures then.
Oh, yes.
Not country pleasures.
Ice skating at Reed Moor, which was the home of the country home of these Reeds, who was his uncle was a United States Senator. From Montana.
Here's a kind of a broad question, and I think we've pretty well covered, but we'll go over it again. How do you view your accomplishments, your successes and failures?
Well, I had no great accomplishments. I mm-hmm. lived for the day, you might say.
You became the dean of bankruptcy law.
Yes.
You were president.
I'd rather put it this way. I'm a gregarious individual. I like people. I don't look for faults. And the result is that I've somewhat accepted and, shall I use the word, popular, in a sense.
So you consider that was a satisfaction for you.
That's right. In other words, Barney, you be the president. You do so and so. Mm-hmm. With the B'nai B'rith, our little club in Squirrel Hill that was formed, and Barney, we want you to be the president. It was just nothing that I ever asked for or ever wanted, and I actually turned down some of these so-called opportunities, but I got along with people. I didn't rub anybody the wrong way, let's put it that way. Not that I didn't stand for my convictions with anything of that nature, but it's one of those deals.
What would you do if you could do it again? What profession would you follow?
I would follow the law profession. However, I would do it in a different style, different fashion.
How so?
I would actually study. I, in all fairness, can say that I just drifted through law school. I never had any trouble getting by, so-called. And could have been much better, farther along, we'll say. But I was content to live and date and all that sort of thing. I didn't miss anything. I loved the theater.
You had several disappointments we talked about in not getting the recognition in the Bar Association due to political...
Well, not so much political, but kind of family involvement. Again, my desire not to want to achieve at the expense of someone else. Mm-hmm. And
well, it was political in a way that they told you once that... they didn't want two Jewish...
That's right.
I call that political.
I see. Well, as I explained to you, I didn't want to upset a boat or anything of that nature. But by the end of my second year, I was the president of the college fraternity. I just never had any trouble getting along with people. Mm-hmm. And...
What was your biggest disappointment? Or something that you failed at?
I really never failed, in the sense of it.
You never had a fire or a failure?
No fire, no failure, but... I just feel that I didn't give it all I could have given, if you know what I mean. I was willing to just move along, although I suppose someone else say he's been a tremendous worker or something like that, devoted to his profession,
I would
say that. But I do know that I worked like a Trojan. After all, I from 1924, when I was admitted to practice, until I went out on my own around 1950, I was under the gun all the time. And
would you have gone out on your own if you could do it again? Would you go out on your own sooner?
I am not certain about that. I think there's a lot to be said for going with an older person, older practitioner, and you get the benefit of his experience and judgment, and that it stood me well, you know, the years. It didn't hurt me at all. When you talk about failures, I just can't quite...
Well, that's good.
I just can't quite say that I... Family failure, or is it something else again I'm referring to? Losing a wife and all that thing.
Well, that's not a failure.
It's an event
over which you have no control.
That's right. It was a heartbreak. It was for the time. You know, I was a pretty good husband, and I had a sick wife for 19 years, and it was one of those tough situations.
Oh, sure.
And you grasp at straws, maybe. I don't know.
You probably did as much as you could.
Dr. Shulman, who was later shot and killed by some Armenian or some woman down in the Hill District. She's a crazy woman. And he just discovered this heart condition. Mm-hmm. And after she was in bed for 6 months after Betty Ann was born. Mm-hmm. And then she came back, and she loved to go out and dance. And before that, she was terrific.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the way of...
But this started so early on.
Yeah, that's right. And apparently, she must have had, during the flu epidemic in 1918, was about which time she was 14 years old, mm-hmm. it lifted this heart valve. And I guess today they would correct it in 5 minutes on the operating table. And we started out up in the evening, go to a club affair with Westmoreland or whatever it may be. And she was a very pretty girl.
Mm-hmm. I heard she was beautiful.
you could see the life seeping out as the evening wore on, you could say. Mm-hmm. And she kept up, even to the time till Betty Ann got in. She was ill at the time with Betty Ann, was waiting to be accepted at Wellesley.
But she died suddenly.
And I was sitting talking to her. It was on a Friday evening. Her doctor was out of town. And she said, well, my doctor said I could go downstairs tomorrow. And she was eating. Well, there was Dr. Ick Cohn, who died a few years ago. He had a brother, Mort Cohn, who was a pathologist or something at the McGee Hospital. Mm-hmm. Wonderful guy. And he had died only a short time before of a heart attack. And she's reading this Reader's Digest, sitting up in bed. It was about by this doctor up in Canada, whose wife lives in Pittsburgh now. She's married to John Drew, who was a judge for a short time. What's her name? She's a medical doctor herself. In any event, she's this Jewish guy up in Montreal or something. He's written any number of books about tension and how it affects the heart and all that sort of stuff. And she was reading when she had an apple. She was just taking a bite out of an apple. And she said, well, this is just what happened to Mort Cohn. That's it. It was just like that.
She knew she was dying.
No, she just the. Just like and I went over and I flipped a piece of apple out of her mouth.
We had the colored
housekeeper downstairs, and I called her. Her father, Ben Cohn, was in California visiting his son, and she had this sister who was living in Dayton, Ohio. And I was in the house, and Betty Ann was just a freshman at Wellesley, 1 month of Wellesley.
What a shock for you. So she was ill all those years, but the death was totally unanticipated.
Oh, yeah, but in and out. These little spells would come on for a week or so, and I'd carry her upstairs or something like that. She didn't want to walk the steps. Mm-hmm. And
but then lots of periods she would be fine.
Oh, yes. She couldn't be too active in a sense, but, we'd drive Atlantic City and nothing, anything like that. We spent one summer down there when Betty Ann was a baby. Mm-hmm. And I never expected this to happen. It went on for 19 years, and this is good. I never even gave it a second thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's sad for you, but I'm glad you remarried.
Yeah. She would have been 77 this past April the 4th.
Isn't that right?
And by the way, her closest friend in those days was Rose Krieger, Leonard Krieger's wife, mm-hmm. and she was 77 this past week.
Rose
was 77 on the 24th, the 4th and the 24th.
Oh,
my wife, Pearl was 20 days younger, older.
It's hard for me to believe.
I was going to call Rose, but I changed my mind.
she'd love to hear from you.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now I come to contrast Pittsburgh today with Pittsburgh yesterday. That's a broad question.
Yeah.
Socially, culturally, politically, environmentally. How can we do that?
Well, socially, I would say that the original Jewish families in Pittsburgh are gone. Very few still living, and if they are, they're...
Well, what about their children and grandchildren?
Children and grandchildren have all left Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
If, for example, you take there are no Kaufmans left in Pittsburgh, there's no Spears in Pittsburgh, there's no Kaufmans in Pittsburgh.
No, I guess not.
There's the Johnny Wolf, I'm talking about actually Kaufmans. None of these old families that I knew when I first came to uh-huh. Pittsburgh, I knew of, have all died out or moved away.
Uh-huh.
And they're no longer here. And in those days, there was quite a distinction between these Temple Jews and the Orthodox Jews. And there still is in the sense, but there's no longer, the German Jews and the Litvaks or Hungarians or what have you. There's been, a crossing of lines.
Yes, and you mean as a young man there was a definite...
definite cleavage.
What is your ethnic background? German?
Russian? When I say Polish Jews, I guess we call ourselves, Litvaks.
All right.
From which it was under the domination of Russia.
Everything was, but it was Polish.
That's right. Both my father and mother came from, they weren't from, not too far away from each other in Poland. But I first met, shall we say, the so-called German crowd when I was at Pitt, and they'd come to invite to fraternity affairs, and I got to know all of them and socialize with them. But there was a real line of cleavage, we'll say, between the different Jews. They were either on the Hill District, bright but poor.
Did many Jewish families live on the Hill District?
Oh, man, it was shall we say.
But you didn't. You moved to Beacon Street.
No, we moved from Connellsville to Beacon Street, but I'm talking about some of them already moved to the East End, but there weren't too many in Squirrel Hill. Oakland had them when I came to Pittsburgh. Oakland and Highland District, Negley Avenue District. Northside had some, but the Squirrel Hill hadn't really started so great. There were some, but not that much.
I understand there are not too many Jews in Squirrel Hill right now, that there's been a big change again.
I wouldn't, we can't answer that. I really don't know.
I wasn't aware myself, but that's what I mean.
I wouldn't be surprised. There have been a lot of these ones who were up there moving into condominiums down on Fifth Avenue or some such place, and selling their homes.
And some in Point Breeze.
Yes, oh yes.
All right, now we've already talked about the fact that the politics have changed.
Yeah.
And what about the cultural changes?
First, on the political side, all the Jews who were originally Republicans
have become
Democrats, shall
well,
we say.
Most of them, anyhow.
Yes, most of them. What was your last question?
What cultural changes have you seen?
Well, there's no line of distinction between the different Jewish groups. They're all members of the Concordia Club, or some are members of the Duke King Club, or members of three different Jewish country clubs. There's been
more social. The Jews are more social.
That's right. More social than anything. I would say no question about that. Jews are now members of the University Club and the Pittsburgh Athletic Association and the Harvard-Yale-Princeton Club.
Well, weren't they members of Harvard-Yale-Princeton
Club? Yes, a few, just
because they weren't. Even when you first got out of school, they didn't distinguish.
No, no, it's never been much more than the luncheon club, although they do serve dinner. But it's about the size of it.
How do you view Pittsburgh's Jewish life and its place in the general community now?
Jewish life in Pittsburgh today is has broadened greatly. I believe that since the organization of the UJF, rather than when in the earlier days when the when that wasn't in the community. There's been, a greater responsibility, and they're acting up to it. In other words, when you have to talk about raising $8 or $9 million in the annual drive for the UJF, it's an indication that there are a lot of people are working together for the good of the community. And my own inclination is to think that it's for the better. I know, for example, I once questioned the head of the United Way in Pittsburgh, who were members, both of us members of the Rotary Club, the Jews doing their share. And his answer is, oh, absolutely, which I like to hear very much.
So do you think, then, that the Pittsburgh Jewry really takes their place in the general community?
I would think so. There's new leadership here. There's new There's new money in Pittsburgh among the Jews. There's no question about that either.
So you don't think they're too narrow?
No. I think they've changed in the sense that now it's Florida for the winter and Pittsburgh for the summer, we might say. So many of them have their apartments. I think that's one of the things that's hurt some of the clubs around here, the Jewish clubs, because they'd rather spend the winters in Florida than belong to a local club. I also found that the young Jews who go away to college, many of them don't come back to Pittsburgh.
Why is that?
I don't know whether it's because they...
Well, your grandchildren aren't here.
No, that's typical. Mm-hmm. Neither of them have any real desire to come back to Pittsburgh. And
that wasn't the case.
That wasn't the case. They either came back to the family business or the family profession or whatever it might be. But now they...
Charlie and I have 6 children, and we don't have 1 child in Pittsburgh, but he's not Jewish.
Yeah. Well, so the family situations, you know.
People are mobile today.
That's right. You take my friend's children. You take Leonard Krieger's children. Daughter lives in New York. She did. And Ike Cohn's daughter lives in...
Is there anything that you would like to cover or add? Yeah.
I really can't think of anything at the moment that could be added. I can only...
How do you feel about Israel and what's going on there?
I am strictly pro-Israel, naturally, and I've never been in Israel. I've always been putting it off, hoping, well, when they sign a peace treaty with the Arabs, then I'm going to go. I just keep putting it off, and now I'm getting to an age where I don't know whether I can travel 14 hours overnight or something to Israel flying. But I don't like some of their attitudes. I don't like some of the things they do. But when it comes, for example, on this rig wanting to ship to ourselves.
In other words, barter it.
That's right. Have a quid pro quo, you know. You want these? Okay, we want you to make peace with Israel and they recognize them as a state, not that they should be driven into the sea. Mm-hmm. I say it's a lot of the things that Begin doesn't, all that sort of thing doesn't sit well with me. I have great confidence in Dayan. I heard him the last time he was in Pittsburgh, up at the Tree of Life, Robinson. Are you putting this down at all?
No, but I just have fearful for Israel.
No, when I mentioned Robinson, just now that Robinson Hall, I just heard yesterday that Sylvia Robinson's brother, who had a furniture store, what was her maiden name?
I don't know.
I did hear it.
What happened?
That he's in bankruptcy now. Okay, Sylvia's brother.
Hi. This concludes the interviewing sessions with Bernard Goodman.